Hi, this is Elizabeth Grayson, Amanda from Highlander. Check out my new young adult novel called Chilling. It's out in ebook right now on Amazon and all the other platforms out there in the world. Check it out. It's a romantic fantasy, and I'd love for you to read it. You are listening to the Fandom Podcast Network.
Welcome, Highlander fans, to episode 32 of Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On the show, we cover all things Highlander, including guest interviews, movies, TV shows, books, audiobooks, games, special events, and a special Blood of Kings Highlander series episode fan pick, The Commentary. I'm Kevin, one of your Blood of Kings hosts, but you know, I don't do this alone. I need my fellow immortal brother, my fellow immortal Chamoli, and Highlander aficionado. With me is my co-host, Norman. Welcome, Norm.
Get out of my head. Get out of my head. I have to struggle with this persona in my brain every single day. Okay, I'm good.
You're good?
I can fight those demons.
Oh, man, you got some serious demons going on there, bro.
Well, he is the demon Lopan.
Having a little callback there to the last episode of Highlander TV series fan pick by Vince Stefanelli.
Yep.
Mortal Sins. And this is part two, the actual audio commentary. We had some fun with our audio commentary. And as we mentioned last episode, we got some really good feedback. And Vince was saying, hey, why don't you guys do some TV episodes sometime? And then what did you say, Norm?
I said, well, sure. We can do that. Do you have an idea? And he did have an idea. So this all stems from when we did Highlander 3 and we did the movie commentary along with the retrospective. And before that, we did 2. Before that, we did 1. He enjoyed it so much. He was like, well, why don't you do one about a TV episode? So I'm like, sure, we can do that.
Oh, so good. Now, I'm really excited. We're going to dive right into this. We're going to forego going to Joe's, but because... You know, I packed just a big bag of cheese, so I'm good to go.
Yeah, I have my bottle with me.
Good. Now, before we start this audio commentary, I think we did a pretty good job doing a retrospective on the episode. If you had to say to a new Highlander fan about this episode, what is the one thing that jumps out of what you think they should take note of?
Moral dilemma.
Good
Absolutely.
Choice.
I think that Highlander is always at its best when it presents the audience with a moral question that challenges their own kind of like moral compass in a will.
Yeah. For me, what I got out of it was a quickening isn't always a good thing.
No.
Depending on whose head you take.
There are some quickenings you want to take, and there are some quickenings you're like, nope. I don't want that in my brain at all.
Exactly. So, and this is one of those shows, as we mentioned last episode, that we have to thank the fans for and their activity on Blood of Kings. And we love to be able to have the opportunity to shape our podcast based on what the fans are saying. Right, Norm?
Well, I mean, our fans are everything to us. And as much as you and I think that we have this great, you know, this great set of content that we have scheduled, and we do, I think that it's also responsible for us to listen to what our fans want and to provide them with that kind of entertainment. And this is a great idea. I mean, we have covered television episodes in the past. We've covered Band of Brothers in a way. We've covered The Samurai in a way. But this is our first commentary on an episode, and to be quite honest, it's a very good choice.
It is. It's got a little bit of everything. The plot is fantastic, well-rounded characters, great acting, great costumes, and it points the arrow at why Highlander writing can be so good, and brings up some, as you said, great moral dilemmas, which is at the core the Highlander TV series is supposed to do, you know, put you in these situations of what immortals would do. And can they live a normal life? And in my opinion is no, you can delay it, but no, you cannot. Do you think they can live a normal life to a certain degree?
Sooner or later, their lifestyle, i.e. the gathering, will catch up with them, because immortals are predestined, and maybe that's an arguable point, they are predestined to come into conflict with each other. And if they are graced with a long enough life, they are also graced with the ability to take certain sides in their lifetime, whether it is the side of good or the side of evil. And in this case, one immortal is the side of good, and there is one immortal that is definitely the side of evil. I don't think there's actually a fan of ours out there that will say, nope, Nazis weren't that evil.
To quote Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade, Nazis. I hate these guys.
Right.
Well, as a reminder to our listeners and our fans out there, this is because of Vincent Stefanelli's suggestion. Good suggestion. Thank you again, Vince. Episode is called Mortal Sins. Originally aired May 8th, 1995. This is season 3, episode 19. Now, Norm, this is when Highlander really started to hit its stride, wouldn't you say?
Yes, absolutely. I agree. And it's kind of like this with television in general. Season 3 usually is kind of like that magical make-or-break season. And I think that starting off the season very strongly with the samurai, that's episode 1, and that's with when Ephraim McAsh actually took the reins as swordmaster for the series. There are so many fantastic characters, character arcs, and developments that happened in this season. Obviously, we saw the Mythos arc, you know, with Song of the Executioner, and then with Star-Crossed, and then Mythos himself. We go all the way to the very end of the season with finale part 1 and 2, which is probably one of the greatest two-parters in the history of the season, with the treachery that Kallus has exacted upon our heroes with the blackmail of the Watcher's CD-ROM. So many great moments in this season, and I think this is the season that really cemented Highlander in... not just in the fandom of Highlander, but I think in the fandom of all things geekery. I think this is when people really kind of stood up and took notice.
That's a good point. Very good point. Now, for you, those of you that might be jumping in on this episode, go back and listen to the previous episode, episode 31, for our complete analysis on this particular episode. And we go deep into it. We touch on all of the plot points and the cast. And I think we were pretty thorough about that, Norm. And I was proud of that.
Yeah, I really liked what we did in the last episode, because we really took a look at that particular episode, Mortal Sins, as something that has always been on kind of the fringe of being one of the great episodes. And I think it is. It very well may actually make my top 10 at any one given point in time. I'm sure, obviously, with Vince Stefanelli, it's one of his top 10, if not his top 5. I think it's one of his favorites. And why not? Because it really does challenge the audience in terms of what they think Highlander is about and what Highlander is really about. And what Highlander, the series, does best, and especially episodes like this, it really grounds you in a very moral issue. And that's what I think that I can't wait to dive into this episode, because as much as we covered it in the retrospective, I think that a lot of our personal feelings will really be exposed here in the commentary.
Agreed. Now, before we start, I'm just going to give a quick little plot outline as a reminder of what we're about to watch. When a young foreigner is chased into the Paris church by white supremacists, Father Bernard sees a man he remembers from his youth in Nazi-occupied France. he thought long dead. In flashbacks to 1943 Paris, immortal Ernst Daimler is a Nazi officer, and Duncan is part of the resistance group based at a monastery. While Duncan leads a resistant group as they ambush a Nazi courier, little Bernard sees him shot, die, and revive. But Duncan binds Bernard to secrecy. In modern day, Father Bernard realizes Daimler is also an immortal and asks Duncan to help stop Daimler, who is now the leader of a white supremacist group working for a cause within the system. Also, Anne tells Duncan that she is pregnant, but Duncan isn't sure if his lifestyle can allow for raising a child. And one thing that we should mention, too, is that Father Bernard not only sees Daimler die, but also has a hand in it as well. So that's a quick little synopsis here. And Norm, I'd say we can go ahead and let the listeners know that we're going to count down from five. We're going to go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play. And when I say play is when you'll hit the start of your iTunes or DVD, and we're going to start it right at the beginning of the opening song credits, where you see Duncan walking down that ominous alleyway with the well-lit shadows in the background, and then soon you'll hear the voiceover of a certain Joe. So you ready,
man? I'm so stoked, dude. It was like, we haven't done this at all yet, like an actual commentary of the TV show. So yes, I'm very excited about it.
All right, you ready?
Ready.
Okay, so I'll do 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play, and on play, we will hit play.
When you say the word play, we push the button play.
Exactly. You ready?
All right, ready.
All right, here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, play.
He is immortal. You know he is. I love this opening. I think that the first season opening was a little challenging because there was so much going on.
I am Duncan MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod.
Yeah. And then you see you see the word like quickening and this and that like flying across the screen. But it's nice to be in this moment and see a lot of the scenes from like the first two seasons of Highlander. And I think at this moment, it's a great maturity where we are in the series.
Yeah, and I love the scenes of the sulfur fight.
Yes.
And just there's some really good episodes that we get to see in this opening. And I think having Jim Burns do the intro just really kind of rounded out the series with being able to have him do that instead of Duncan MacLeod in that kind of monotone robot voice that he did in the first season.
Now in the credits, we see Stan Kirsch as Richie Ryan, even though he doesn't appear in this episode. We see Lisa Howard as Dr. Anne Lindsay. And I'm going to go out on a limb because I'm not sure how the rest of the fan community will feel about me saying this, but I absolutely loved Lisa Howard as Dr. Anne.
I'm sorry, I agree with you 100%. Yeah. Big fan of her. Had a little crush on her too. I'm going to say that as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the guys did for sure. Yeah. Now, this is an interesting opening of the episode because as Highlander fans, when we see a church, we automatically assume that it's a place of sanctuary and a place of protection and somewhere where, well, I guess it doesn't matter if you're immortal or mortal. It's somewhere where you can be safe.
Right, right.
Now, as a former practicing Catholic, because I was baptized Catholic, when I'm watching this episode, I see a lot of the traditions of the Catholic faith here. And you brought this up in the last episode, Kevin. You said that the director, Mario Azzopardi, he had an issue with whether or not the wine in the chalice during the sacrament of the Eucharist was supposed to be white or red. And then in post, they changed it to red.
Yeah, he wanted it white, and he was opposed to this. This was one of the things that the creators and the director butt heads against. Yeah.
Now, knowing that we're in the back half of the season and in Highlander, because this is a joint production venture with Reicher Entertainment and some German investors, we know that the setting that we're in, we're in Paris, and eventually, we're going to have...
There's the red.
Yes. Yep, there's the red.
And here we are introduced to Ernst Daimler, played by Andrew Woodall. Well played, too. I love how he's still got that long leather Nazi trench
right?
coat.
Exactly. His accent, I think, is fantastic.
Oh, he is. He is. Yeah. And you hit it right on. He has that kind of Ralph Fiennes Schindler's List thing going on there.
Yeah. I think that they actually did a really good job here intercutting like these really fast flashback sequences with Father Bernard, which is who we're seeing here, his realization of who this particular person is, this Ernst Daimler is. He knows who he is, and the last time he saw him was at that age when they flashed back to him just briefly as a child.
Yeah, yeah. He says, "Little Bernard, is that you?" Yeah. and the little flashback in between little version and older version, they casted a really good kid to play that role.
When you saw this scene for the first time, when you remember this for the first time, Dr. Anne is quite brusque with Duncan in this scene.
Oh, yeah.
You
know something's going on. And yeah. I've been in situations with, you know, the other half mm-hmm. where
the
something's
fairer
sex. Not quite right. Yeah. You know?
No matter how hard you try, no matter how hard Duncan is trying, he's trying to make it just, he's trying to have a nice morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But something's bugging her.
Oh, definitely. I think that's actually something that was very pointed in this episode where the director wanted you to feel that there was something amiss.
Yeah. 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 And they did a good job. And Lisa Howard is Dr. Anne Lindsay. She's great.
Well, she's coming back from, or at least the character of Dr. Anne is coming back from reconciling with Duncan after she saw Duncan die what she believed was a mortal death at the hands of Callus.
Yeah, that's right.
So she didn't know what happened to Duncan, per se. And obviously there was a period of grief in her life where she had to work some things out. Now, I love this scene because we know who Father Bernard is from the cold opening. We know that he recognized Ernst Daimler from his past. And now he's associating himself with someone who he believes was also a part of his past. Not quite sure yet.
Yeah. Interesting trivia here, too. They could not film scenes right next to his barge because the water level was too high at this time for them to roll that in with the scene. So they had to kind of cut the film in the scene so it seemed like he was coming from the barge. There was a stock footage of the barge, but you did not see him right next to it.
Oh, that's right. Now, here's something that I still can't wrap my brain around, and I think that's something that's probably what makes us love Highlander the way we do. When he sees Bernard at this age and he realizes that it's Bernard from the past, it's something that just hits him at his very core. Like, little Bernard, is that you? And then yeah. He goes all the way back to when he saw him 50 years ago when he's fighting with the French resistance at this time at this church. And there he is. There's Bernard, little Bernard again. I still can't fathom how immortals process the passage of that kind of time.
Oh, I know. They measure time in a different way. They have to, you know, and to see someone automatically just be grown up version of who they used to be, mm-hmm. It's got to be a shock to the system too.
Now, I love that they're dealing with the French resistance, the French underground, which was a huge movement against the Nazi regime, you know, when it came to the European theater. I like seeing things like the period accurate subterfuge of being able to hide the radio unit. In the
I'm glad you brought that up because that's always something that you see in these movies, these period pieces taken during World War II. Always hiding people from the Nazis, hiding objects and weapons from the Nazis. And mm-hmm. That was something that hit home with me when I was in Amsterdam visiting the Anne Frank house. You would see where they would hide things and where they would hide people. And it's something that, you know, has always become very clever in finding and smuggling people and resistant members out of areas as well.
I think one of the things that Highlander did better than most was really paying attention to the quality of their productions and the flashbacks. I think that that has to be sold supremely well, or else you wouldn't buy this at all.
Ah, the buzz.
Yeah.
What's up, Immortal? Oh, geez, he's a Nazi.
Now, you brought this up in the previous episode when we were talking about the retrospective, and one of the things that we don't see here on the costumes of the Nazis is the actual swastika band itself.
Yes.
And I think that, to be fair, there are investors in the European production of Highlander, and one of those investor groups was German. And probably they wanted to be sensitive about this recreationist period in history where, okay, yes, we know the Nazis were evil. Yes, we know they are of a certain look and silhouette. But let's not be so on the point about it so that we don't insult or upset our foreign investors.
Yeah, exactly, which included some German investors. And in Germany, they don't use the swastika if they don't have to, unless they're specifically doing a piece in World War II where you have to dress the Nazis up. And we saw that in a lot of American production as well. And I remember when, if for you Voyager fans out there, when the Hirogen had taken over the Voyager, they Star Trek Voyager. Thank you for clarifying. They had used the Nazi symbol armbands with the swastika, and that created some issue with some international card distributors. That was something that would not be allowed to sell in certain stores. So they use symbols like, to get out of that, use the Iron Cross or the Eagle, and of course the costumes as well. The Nazi costumes are so iconic. You know, it's easy to see, and plus when you got a good actor playing a Nazi role, that sells it as well.
Yeah. Now, this is a great scene between Ernst Daimler and Duncan MacLeod. Duncan obviously being on the side of just and good, and Daimler being on the side of the Nazi evil and the atrocities that are always associated with the Nazis. I mean, swastika or not, I mean, all of the trimmings on his overcoat and the death's head cap, obviously the gray motif and the stormtroopers that are surrounding him and those, you know, the grease guns.
That's the MP ones. The grease guns were the
French Resistance ones. Were those the ones that the French Resistance used?
Were the Sten guns. The grease guns were the British commando versions.
Okay, you being you're the weapons expert.
Yes.
So, but all these things are kind of like the, I guess, the traditional trimmings and trappings of what you would see as a Nazi in like a lot of the war films.
I love that overcoat or that brown leather coat that Duncan has. That he always makes him look really good. He's a really good looking resistance fighter.
And we've seen him. I mean, we've seen this look on him before, especially I think it was in The Return of Amanda, where he had to get a scientist out of Nazi occupied. Maybe it was like either France or London or something like that. And then it was like on a biplane, and he was wearing that same kind of look.
Yeah. So what happened to the thing they smuggled?
It was a miracle. But we all know that it was little Bernard that was, you know, he was smart.
I love the car they have here. The costumes, they got everything down here. I love the production value of this episode.
This felt very kind of Sound of Music-y kind of to me.
India. That's right.
You know, when the Nazis, you know, at the very end of the movie, they were
going
to escort.
Once you finish your concert, you will come with us, yes?
Exactly, yeah?
Edelweiss.
Yeah. But you're right, Adrian. You know what? Adrian looks good in pretty much any period piece costume that they put him in.
Papa, I don't like the flags with the big spiders on them. Sorry, I'm having a Sound of Music flashback, which, by the way, proud to admit, is in my top five movies of all time.
All time, right?
All time.
Yep.
Sound of Music.
But it's great that they spent so much time in this flashback. Sometimes flashbacks are, you know, they're just moments in a show just to establish certain flavors. But they really spend so much time establishing the reason why Duncan was there, the reason why Bernard did what he did, the relationship between Duncan and Bernard and the French Resistance, the relationship between all of these characters. Obviously, George Delu, who's seen obviously much younger. I mean, George looks like he's a teenager.
Yeah.
But I think that's the extremes that some of these people were put to during World War II.
I love the fact that you mentioned there's so much time put in the flashbacks, because there's probably a good maybe 40% of this episode is flashbacks.
Well, I think that's important to establish, because a lot of what Bernard is suffering is from his past. And I think that seeing it from this perspective, I love that scene where they're throwing kind of like the leaves over them. Like,
those are the Sten guns, by the way, that the Resistance is using. Those are dropped over enemy lines by Allied airplanes and parachutes.
How is it you know so much about World War II armory?
I'm just a huge fan of it. My dad was. I've watched countless documentaries. Just fascinated with it.
This here is where Ernst Daimler dies a mortal death. And before he does so, exacts a mortal death upon Duncan, which leads to a really interesting plot point here in the episode, because Duncan is right now suffering a mortal wound.
And he knows it, and he's basically, the animal instinct in him is trying to find a good place to go die so no one sees him do it.
Exactly.
Except.
Little Bernard.
Yep.
Now, this is the moment that I talked about in the previous episode, where this is the Connor-Rachel moment. Because when Connor died in front of Rachel in the flashback, World War II flashback in Highlander, the director's cut in 1996, when he came back to life, he said, hey, it's a kind of magic. And Duncan's not quite as, I guess, as charming.
No, he goes, stay there. It's a kind of magic.
Well, he doesn't. He doesn't want anyone else to realize what's happening. And like, this goes all the way back to when we were doing Rules of the Game, where there's that soft rule of immortals like to keep their private business away from the public.
Yeah.
But think about what's happening to Bernard at this time. Bernard aids and abets the murder of Nazis. He aids and abets the violence upon all of these people that he's never met. Yeah. And now he has to hold a secret, the probably greatest secret that he's ever held, that he saw somebody come back to life.
I love that line that Duncan tells little Bernard, saying, you kept a secret yesterday. Will you have to keep another?
Right. I mean, think about it. He's like, what, 10?
I love that.
I love that fade. Yeah.
As long as I live, I'll keep that secret. Even
he's young then, and he has so much guilt and weight and gravitas thrust upon him. And that has been with him his entire life.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that we really have to kind of address here in this episode, is that when he comes to Duncan for help, and Duncan, because he shared that secret with him, he's like, I'm not going to try and use a ruse against you. You know who I am. We've done this before. You found me. And this is that point where I made in the previous episode where in 31, when we're talking about collapsed time, Bernard is trying to find a way to try and get Duncan re-involved in the fight in modern times versus the Nazis again with Daimler and his new brown shirts regime.
Yeah. Yeah, he's telling them where they are.
50 years past.
Yeah. The other thing I love about Highlander is being able to film a scene here on the famous Seine River. If for those of you that haven't been to Paris, find it sometime in your lifetime to do so, because there's just something special about walking down that river. And I know you've done it yourself.
I have. I actually just posted that recently on Blood of Kings, my little TBT back to 2007 when I was there. Now, this is an interesting kind of a scene with Anne and with Duncan, because she's not as irate, I guess, with Duncan in this scene. She's trying to understand why he needs to engage with Ernst Daimler again, but he doesn't want to in a I need to take him out kind of way. He needs to in a what is he doing in Paris kind of way. Duncan is actually interesting because he wants to find out the motive behind a certain immortal before he judges juries and becomes executioner for that immortal.
And she's struggling with...
And Anne's like...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, and she's struggling with her own truth to tell him about what's going on with her and where he... if he's where he's going to stand in her future. And, you know, obviously she's distraught the fact that he has, that she's choosing to deal with this.
Right.
So now he's this going into the white supremacist, the white supremacist office.
You know, there's one of our friends here on Blood of Kings, Andy Sloan. You know, he's really good at he actually has chronicled all of these locations, and I'm pretty sure he knows exactly where this is. This set.
It's always kind of reminds me of like all these surly people you saw in Fight Club.
Right.
You know?
What stays in the new brown shirts or you don't mention. What yeah.
Andrew Woodall is just great as Ernst Daimler.
You know what's great about when actors really get it? Is that when he says Duncan MacLeod, he says it with a 50-year grudge.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes, he does.
Like, these new skinhead brown shirts, they're just punks, and they follow what Daimler is saying. But Daimler, he believes what he's doing is right and just.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an episode. I mean, in 1995, it's still very on the nose that there is still white supremacy, racism, and just racial abuse that's being pointed towards people.
And he's up front with him saying, I am who I am, you know, and yeah. I fight for what I believe.
Exactly. But when I heard this line, when Duncan said to Darius, is like, I believe in causes that I believe to be just. Daimler is saying the same thing. He believes that what he's doing is just.
And I like how he says you have shaped a world that we can both live in peace.
I believe, now Kevin, you're the expert here, but I believe that is a SS youth knife.
Yes, that is, yep.
And that is usually something that is associated with recruiting people of a certain age into a certain faction.
Yeah, usually it was their first weapon before they got firearms, as they got the youth knife. And it was also one of the things that the GIs coveted as souvenirs to bring back to the States.
A friend of mine when I was growing up, his name was Frankie Lucas, and his father, they were Polish. I remember seeing that exact knife as one of his father's collectibles since he was an antique collector.
Yeah. Yeah, and, so if you can find a genuine one, they go for a pretty penny.
You know, the interesting thing about this dialogue, it's very akin to the dialogue that he and Grayson were having, or when Duncan has a dialogue with an immortal, he's like, what are you doing here? What is your point? What are you trying to prove? And what's your end game here?
I love this scene here where he tells Duncan about the guilt that he has. And then Duncan goes, what are you talking about? And he says, instead of saying so, he says, you ask him.
Exactly.
I love that.
And this is where like the tonal shift of this episode happens, because when Bernard came to Duncan, it wasn't necessarily about protection. I think it was almost about confession.
Yes, exactly. Confession, and I think also mostly confession. I think you're right. Yeah, because he needs to tell someone else, and the only person he knows that would understand this is a fellow immortal.
I mean, think about what he's been holding on to this entire time since he was a boy. Yeah. What does that do to you?
This is the scene that I referred to that reminded me a lot of several scenes in Schindler's List with Ralph Fiennes, mm-hmm. where he threatens many people to get what he needs.
It's not my fault. It's your fault.
Yeah.
Right?
You're the reason why I have to do this.
I think that one of the great things about the way they wrote him, the way that Andrew Woodall plays him, is that there's a certain threat of what's going to happen even before it's going to happen. And I think that's like, you just pulled the gun, right? I think that has to do with understanding the Nazis from history as who they were and are.
Yeah.
Interesting thing, though, on that Stormtrooper's helmet, there actually was a Nazi flag. I think that's the only swastika that we've seen so far.
The gun that Daimler pulls out is the famous Luger, mm-hmm. which is a very loud weapon when it's fired, but also was known to jam a lot. And a lot of officers actually used the smaller Walther PPK because it jammed less, which is famously known by the original Bond weapon.
That's correct. I think that his accent was on point. You know, there are German accents that sound like overly German, but I think that there are some like hard G's, hard H's. Go ahead.
I also wanted to mention, too, the other Walther that was used, I think, more than the PPK was, remember the Walther, remember the
P-38.
Weapon? Yes, the P-38 that a certain Transformer toy started out as.
And should have stayed as. Now, this is something, for me, I think that was, this is probably the most profound moment in this particular episode because think about what Bernard just did. He shoved a pitchfork through a man.
And he's watching him pull it out.
Right.
And he's about to die here, but then death takes over and he's spared.
I mean, think about what he chose to do. He did so in a reactionary mentality. He was like, you know what? I'm tired of the Nazis. I'm tired of what they're doing. I'm part of the French Resistance. I'm 10 years old, and I just shoved a pitchfork through a man.
Yeah. Now, what was interesting about this scene, and Gillian Horvath, one of the writers, when they were doing the audio commentary, they were saying, now in Highlander, when an immortal dies, when he comes back to life, it depends on the script.
Oh, absolutely.
And they said, well, Duncan comes back to life pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But for Mr. Daimler here, it took about 12 hours.
Right. And that's one of those kind of things where if we wanted to throw this into the rules of the game, there are no set parameters for when an immortal will come back from dead.
One Nazi in a bag, two Nazi in a bag.
But I think that this is probably the most telling moment where Bernard says, what was that? I think I just noticed something. And Daimler's still alive. Right? Immortal or not, Daimler is still alive.
Yeah. He's going to be drowned to death over and over.
This is that moment where you're like, he's just a boy. Right?
Oh, and he hears his voice.
Oh, God. You know, because Daimler knows what's going to happen. It's so tragic. It is absolutely so tragic. I mean, yes, he was a Nazi, and yes, he was evil. But it's not so much what happened to Daimler is the issue. It's what Bernard had to endure because of Daimler is the issue.
And Abramowitz touched on that in the special features briefly by saying, you know, when he was creating that character, he wanted to really showcase what type of burden you have when you actually take someone's life, especially in a way like that.
I love Anne Lindsay. I'm so attracted to her. I'm sorry.
She's very pretty, and she's such a good actress, too.
Yeah.
And she knows, like, Duncan, what are you doing? No. She's got a secret.
Mm-hmm. Now, truth be told, it's because of scenes like this where I actually had to buy my own leather vest.
Because it looks so darn cool with the ponytail you had.
It sure looked good on him. So this is the moment where you and I deliberated whether or not there was an A plot or a B plot in this episode. And because of the gravitas of what she just said, I'm pregnant in the realm of immortals. I believe that it's an A plot.
Well, I said there's two A plots.
Yeah.
There's A plot A and A plot B. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Now, in the exposition of this scene, to catch everybody up, Anne saw Duncan die at the hands of Callus before they made the transition from Seacouver to Paris. And then there was a series of episodes where Anne wasn't involved. And then, you know, Duncan was like, well, no, he was convinced that he has to reestablish that connection with her because he loved her that much. Yeah. But there is this whole, well, if I involve her in my life, the violence that may be exposed to her that happened upon Tessa could happen again. And that's something we touched on in that same episode, in episode in 31, where can mortals live a normal life in the immortal game?
Here's an observation, kind of slightly off topic, but because they're on his barge, do you know when they were shooting in France, did they have a set somewhere in a studio that was his barge, or did they actually do filming inside the barge, or just did they use the barge for exterior shots?
To be completely honest, I actually don't know, but I have to believe that to be able to control the camera angles and the look and the spacing, I have to believe that it is a set.
That's what I was going for, probably. I was believing that, but I just love the idea of having a barge as a place to live and have stuff happen.
This, for me, is one of my favorite scenes in the episode, because think about how long it's been since maybe these two have seen each other and when they first worked together. Because now you're dealing with, which I think is a very cool thing that they've done in Highlander. Rarely do they ever do this. The older man that you see sitting with Father Bernard is Georges Delu. And the same actor who played George here in this scene, we only saw earlier on in season one, two seasons ago, in For Tomorrow We Die. And I think that's super cool that they were actually able to bring back the same actor to play the same part.
A little trivia, too. He actually appeared as an extra in another episode, according to the special features. I don't remember the episode, but I think he was part of a background with a group of people in like a outdoor shopping area or something like that. So he kept coming back.
Well, I think that, you know, when you're dealing with the production aspects of this is now on the Gaumont side of the production, where you're dealing with French casting and if you need, you know, people to be, you know, to return again. But I think that this scene here is very powerful because Bernard is actually finally revealing and breaking an oath he actually gave to Duncan about the secret that he was supposed to hold for as long as Duncan lived. But there are certain things that are weighing on Bernard right now. He's like, I don't know who to talk to and where to turn. And it's like, well, maybe I can turn to one of my oldest friends.
Well, Mr. Delu, he's rocking that nice beard.
I like that these two are coming together over all this time. It's like, you know what? We fought the Nazis together. You know, we have all this history. And now we're here in this modern club where you and I, Kevin, are watching this at a modern time frame. But these guys did something really profound against, you know, the Nazis in World War II 50 years ago.
It's kind of like, I know what you did back in 1943.
Exactly. And now we're here having a coffee. So in a very kind of specific way, it's kind of like what immortals do. You know, when immortals like meet each other again, it's like, hey, you remember when we saw each other last? We saw each other like 100 years ago, and now we're having a coffee here, you know, again. Mm.
It's at Notre Dame, right?
She's so pretty.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for all the fans that aren't fans of Dr. Anne Lindsay, but I'm completely 100% not on board.
We are on team Anne. We're team Anne here.
Yeah. I really like Lisa Howard in this role. I think that she brought a completely different dynamic to a strong female character in Duncan's life.
You know, and when her character was brought in, it made sense that to have a love interest be a doctor. And having her struggle with what everything else she's been taught. So it made sense.
Yeah. You know what I loved about these flashbacks? And flashbacks, I think, in Highlander are these really great barometers of how an immortal has evolved over time. And what we're seeing here is like, you know, Duncan, you know, he's saying like, I can't have children. It's just not in the cards for me. He can't explain why. And he obviously is not revealing to revealing to the fact that he's immortal.
What do you think she's thinking, though? His reason why he can't? But get something shot off? What's going on here?
Ever since, ever since Tessa died, in the darkness, I think that even to this day, there's still a very fresh wound about Tessa.
Yeah, and this is another reason why this episode is so good, because you get the flashbacks of why he explains why he can't, and then you get Tessa back in the episode.
I know. It's Tessa, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to describe for people that don't understand Highlander, but for those who do, when you see Tessa on screen, it's like the whole weight of the episode shifts in her favor.
Yeah. Oh, totally. She's always been a fan favorite.
Yeah.
And when she died, it broke everyone's heart.
Still does. But what I love about this scene is that Duncan is really weighing what's happening and what's at stake, and that he has the opportunity to live a normal life. But what if somebody comes for him and defeats him? And I love Anne's rationale. It's like, you can't predict the future. It's fine for you to reflect on your past, the 400 some odd years that you've lived, or for the thousands of years that Mythos has lived. But at the same time, though, mortals live for this moment, for this present moment. And I think that it's really great that she addresses that. Like, I don't know what the future is going to bring, but this is what our situation is now.
Delu looks like a godfather here.
Well, he's connected.
Yeah.
But I think that if you're part of the French Resistance back in the day, I think that you're well connected, 50 years later.
Yeah, you get major street cred for the rest of your life.
Yeah, big time. If you wear a hat like that, you got big time street cred.
Yeah.
And this is, I think Lisa Howard is really good when she flashes those emotions on her face. She's like, no matter how great the conversation was that we just had, what I'm seeing right now still kind of, it still weighs upon me that maybe it's not the best choice for me to be involved in this at all.
Yeah.
I love this scene so much. I love this scene because this is where we're seeing time collapse on itself. 50 years of history between a man who we saw in For Tomorrow We Die, who believes that this is like Duncan's grandson, right?
Yeah. And French prostitutes outside the window.
Well, that goes without saying in France, I guess. But he's trying to make sense of this. George is no fool.
Yeah.
And he's saying, okay, I understand what Bernard is saying. I understand what you're saying. I understand what I know. And I understand that don't treat me like a fool. So,
yeah.
It's a great realization of what he thinks he knows.
This is just good television drama right here.
And he's treating Duncan as one of Duncan's relatives, not Duncan himself. And I love the fact that this goes all the way back to the episode, what was it, Shadows and Light?
Yes. Where,
when Duncan says to Linda Plager, it's me.
Yeah, that's right. On her deathbed, right? Mm-hmm.
And to George, he's like, it's me, George. And look at him. His whole demeanor changes.
Yeah.
Like, I remember you back when we were hanging out in 1940 something, 45 or whatever, right?
It's true. He's true.
Yeah, it's me, dude.
Father Bernard is correct.
It's interesting how that veil drops so quickly. Like, I think I know you, and all of a sudden, when you say that who you are is who you are, I know you now. You're the same guy that I did this with. You're the same guy that I drank with. You're the same guy that I shot a bunch of Nazis with. Right? I'll tell you one thing about what I love about Highlander. It's the show that encouraged you to wear overcoats.
Oh, yes. Made overcoats cool.
Yeah.
Of course, if it were up to me, we would wear fedoras again, like they did back in those days. Bring back the fedora.
Dr. Jones.
Oh, this is a brutal scene. This was tough.
Yeah.
40 years at the bottom of the Sen. So yeah, you're right. It was closer. It was closer to 50.
Yeah.
40. God, 40 years. I can't imagine it. And he beats him to death with his chains.
Sins of the past.
Yeah. Right? Yep.
Boy, he does love his Nazi trench coat, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
It would have been,
of course,
really,
you know, if you're going to hide a sword, got to have the long coat.
It would have been really interesting if, you know, if Werner Stocker was still alive playing Darius in this particular season, because there's a lot of the aspect of holy ground. And I think this is going all the way back to what we talked about in the rules of the game. What exactly is holy ground to immortals, and what can or can't be done on holy ground when it comes to immortals? Because Duncan right now is saying, like, you're safe here. There's no harm that can come to you here on holy ground.
But would an immortal only honor that to another immortal? Or would an immortal feel free to take a mortal's life on holy ground?
As far as I understand from this scene, nothing can happen on holy ground, immortal or mortal.
Hmm.
It's a sacred space where no violence can be exacted upon. That's what I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And depending on, you know, Highlander lore, usually, and in certain stories, in certain Big Finish audiobook, that immortals can also sense when they're on holy ground. But, you know, not everyone can sense that, because some will be the judge of that.
I love that Bernard here is in his own confessional as a priest.
Yeah.
There's so much that has been eating away at him over the course of all this time. It's literally been stripping away at his moral fiber. That's what makes him a man. I think that he's just like, he's tired. He's tired of it all. Like, win, lose, or draw, I think he just wants all of this to be over.
Yeah.
I think there was one point in time where he was like, you know what? I have kept this at bay, and I have made peace with myself from what I have done, because it was the right thing to do. But ever since he saw Daimler at the very beginning of this episode, his whole world has been turned upside down. He's like, you know what? Maybe I did the wrong thing. Maybe I wasn't in the right. Maybe because of Daimler he's returned, that I'm supposed to pay for my crimes.
No matter who Daimler was, right? Yeah.
Right, exactly. It's just, what did I do, and how was I justified, and how does history judge me for my decisions?
Yeah.
But at the same time, though, that's the same kind of question that Duncan asked himself in For Tomorrow We Die against Stephen Keane. Like, you know what? I believed what I was doing against the British at that time, against the Scottish, was just. But it was still murder in the eyes of those who didn't believe that what Duncan was doing is right.
You know, with this fight with the Nazi thugs, it makes me look ahead to the Chad Stahelski film when he takes over the Highlander film franchise. With his background in stunts, in addition to some really cool sword fighting, if we're going to see some good hand-to-hand combat like we have here in the Highlander TV series, because that's something you really don't see a lot of in the movies. It's usually weapon on weapon, sword on sword, or sword on pipe. But here in the TV series, you really get to see hand-to-hand combat. So I'm curious if we're going to see a lot more of that in the next Highlander movie.
So as we're coming on the conclusion of this episode, where, you know, we're seeing all these great conflicts kind of come to a head. Yes?
No. Real quick, this is a scene that the director, Mario, had a huge problem with in
Why?
Addition to the ride, because of a priest carrying a gun on church on holy ground. Because with his brother also being a priest, mm-hmm. this is something that was just unthought of.
Yeah, but
unthinkable.
The way,
and of course, yeah, we understand the situation, but this was something that he was just headstrong about that he did not like.
But, see,
but
this is
they
where
shot it anyway.
I'll disagree with that because this isn't just a normal priest. This is somebody who's, you know, this isn't someone who's like, you know what, I'm going to enter the priesthood. I'm completely like at peace with myself. There's no baggage that I'm carrying in with me. This is Bernard. Bernard, when he saw Damon, he's like, this guy is haunting me. This guy's coming for me.
Should have stayed on holy ground. Oh.
Oh. Man. Oh. That's the scene where I said, you know what? That's a severe turning point for Anne. Because we all know, it's like, oh my God, she hit the ground so hard, she's pregnant, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, so
where did Duncan come from? He came out of nowhere.
when it comes from that. Oh, so much stuff going on right now. We're gonna have to.
I know.
I'm gonna have to crystallize my thoughts at the end of this episode. But Duncan, right now, it went from I need to take this guy out to pure vengeance.
Yeah.
He's like, you hurt the woman I love. You just put my prospective child, this normal life that I'm trying to fight for, in danger. But isn't that the point?
Yeah, and she said, "Oh, the baby." So I don't know what that means, if she feels like something's happened, but she's definitely afraid of that.
Sure.
See, this is where his hand-to-hand combat just really shines, and it gives him an upper hand.
Daimler's, you know, he's no slouch though. He has given Duncan what for, and he pulls out that knife.
Yes, he does.
That SS knife that Duncan was fondling earlier on in the episode.
I'm watching Anne's reactions here too, because she knows, you know, she wants him dead.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a fierce battle.
Absolutely. This guy is not laying down. Daimler's not laying down.
Now, pay attention to this quickening, as I brought up in the last episode. Tell me if it doesn't look like he's fighting it. He's fighting the demons that come with it.
Oh, he does not want this. And I remember,
watch his face.
I remember reading this earlier on, is that Daimler has suffered certain psychological tragedies because he was buried at sea, if you will, for all those years.
See, look at it. He's putting his hands on his head, like he's like, no, no.
Mm-hmm.
Is he channeling those 40 years at the bottom of the river?
It's so funny, Mike and I.
All the people that he's killed.
Mike and I used to call each other at the end of every episode. This used to be aired on USA in New Jersey on Saturday night, like at like, I don't know, like 11 o'clock at night. And we used to call each other as soon as these episodes ended because we're like, the quickening? What was that all about?
But you're defining every quickening.
Yeah,
see, look at this. He's in pain. He's like, oh my gosh. Yeah. He probably saw all the faces that Daimler, you know, executed and killed and, you know, the mothers, the babies, all those things that he had talked about.
Yep. You know what I find really just impressive about Lisa Howard as Anne Lindsay is that she carries a lot of her emotional content on her face.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's really a strength and an asset to her as an actress, because as soon as something happens, you see it just wash over her like at an instant.
I would have loved to have seen her become, you know, I guess make more appearances, but I see why they did not. But I'm just really happy with the way that they ended her run on the show.
You know,
she ended independently and strong, and she went out with really, really well.
I have not had the opportunity to see her at a convention, and I sure hope that maybe in Los Angeles we will.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah.
This is an important part in Anne Lindsay's development, because what she said, she's like, I'm a doctor, right? I have taken an oath to save lives, not to take them. And what she felt with Daimler is that she wanted Duncan to kill him. She wanted him to end him. That's not her. She's a doctor.
Yeah.
And
she helps people, not wants to see them die.
Right, exactly. And this is heartbreaking, you know? It's heartbreaking at the end because he has to accept the fact that he can't have a normal life, right?
Yeah.
It's funny. At the end of every episode, at the beginning of every episode, we get Queen. At the end of every episode, we get Queen. And I still feel the same way at the end of episodes as I did back when I watched these back in the mid-90s. And it leaves me wanting more. Like, I want to go right next to the next episode, Reasonable Doubt.
I know, because we got finale part one and two coming up, too. What's the next episode after this one again?
Reasonable Doubt.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's like, I almost in a way kind of envy the guys over there, our brothers over there at Highlander Rewatch, because they're doing it like episode by episode by episode by episode by episode.
Yeah.
And it's fun to do. But at the same time, though, you know, I like being able to bounce around from subject matter to subject matter. So for our listeners, that's the end of the episode. Kev, I think we need to spend just a little bit of time to unpack some of the things that have really kind of made a profound impact on us in this episode.
Well, you gave some pretty cool final thoughts on the retrospective. Has anything jumped out at you that maybe you didn't notice before, or something, you know, is there something that has settled with you even stronger than originally you thought?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I didn't want to gloss over too much, there are two things actually. When I'm watching this episode and it's hard to get everything on a documentary or a retrospective commentary, but two things I want the fans to come away with is that, one, remember that when Bernard did what he did that created the haunting that has impacted his life, he was only a boy. You know, I mean, think about it when you were 10 years old, Kev, or yeah. When I was 10 years old, like the worst thing I ever did was probably like, I don't know, set off firecrackers that lit my parents', you know, garden on fire. He killed a man. He killed several men in cold blood.
Yeah.
And he had to live with that and the realization of that as he became a priest and tried to atone for his sins. At the same time, though, I can't gloss over the fact that what Anne was doing with Duncan was she was trying to find a life for herself that involved him, that involved who he was, and the consequences of what came with that life. And Duncan trying to find the same balance. That's why I think, Vince, thank you so much for actually recommending this to us, because this addresses so many issues of the real, really heavy aspects of Highlander that we talk about in Blood of Kings, and especially this whole moral equation.
Oh, yeah, it gives you so much to chew on. And as like I said in the last episode, in the retrospective, this is one of those episodes that you will tell a new Highlander fan to make sure that you watch. Yeah. Because there's just so many aspects to it. And watching this again, doing the audio commentary, it really made me look at Lisa Howard's as an actress and how well, like you said, she carries, how some people say they carry their emotion on their sleeves. Well, you can really see everything in her face and the way that she's able to sell what Dr. Anne Lindsay was going through and see it through her eyes. The other thing that I brought out of this that didn't really take the first few times I watched it recently was those sit down scenes, whether it's between, you know, Father Bernard and George Dalou, or Father Bernard and Duncan MacLeod, or George Dalou and Duncan MacLeod, and even the scenes with Daimler, just some really, really good drama. And this is one of those things where every single character just played their role to the best, and every actor was on it. And just even the stunt guys on the motorcycles, those guys are awesome.
But being able to address the kind of moral depth that was going on in this episode, I think that it speaks volumes of how good this episode really is. And I think that's why, Vince, encouraged us to take a look at this again, because there are certain episodes that get us caught up into kind of like the sexiness of Highlander and the epicness of Highlander. But there are episodes like this. There are episodes for me like Timeless. There are episodes like Methuselah's Gift where, you know, you're seeing all of our characters do certain things, but for very profound and completely different reasons other than fighting the game. You know, with especially with like Timeless and Methuselah's Gift, where Mythos is doing what he's doing to save Alexa. I mean, he's doing these grand gestures. You know, he's fighting the Watchers. He's fighting Immortals because he wants to gain control of the Methuselah Stone because there's someone who he loves who's dying. Right?
Oh, you know we're going to be talking about that in a future episode.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there is the trilogy, the soft trilogy of Legacy, Timeless, and the Methuselah Stone. And I want that to be done in an episode, but it goes all the way back
to... You almost have to throw in Reunion as well.
Yeah, true. That's a good two-part episode. But, you know, that's where Highlander is at its best. And I think that Vince is really, you know, he was really smart at suggesting this because this is Highlander at its best. You know, Mortal Sins is talking about certain very specific mortal and moral equations.
You know, you just brought something up that I was thinking. Do you think when Vince suggested this, he had his reasons why he liked this film? But I can imagine Vince listening to this right now going, you know what, guys? I hadn't considered that one point you made or that other one. So I'm hoping that we were able to contribute something like that to you, Vince. We hope that we did you proud. And Norm and I were proud to tackle this and do this. This was an absolute blast, and I really appreciate you doing this and helping create content for our Bloody Kings podcast. Now, Norm, in the last episode, you gave this episode out of the Immortal Quickening scale. You gave this one a number 8, 8.5, like a Duncan Quickening, right?
Yeah,
I did. You still standing? You were kind of pushing it towards the 9, the Darius level there. Are you still happy with that scale?
Absolutely. I think I'm actually even pushing it closer towards 9, because when you and I started this podcast and we've talked about how like we're kind of like in a certain anniversary point and when we developed this, you know, we were at the 30th anniversary and now like a year later with almost near the 31st anniversary or past the 31st anniversary, and we're talking about what we wanted to do. What we wanted to do with Blood of Kings is explore those moments where we believe Highlander is at its best. And David Abramowitz actually said that, you know, he loved diving into and exposing the most sincere and profound moral aspects of what it means to be an immortal. And I think that Mortal Sins is probably one of those moments. And I think that's something that's very overlooked in the overall canon of the series. Maybe it's because, you know, it's not as sexy as Finale Part 1 and 2. Maybe it's not as epic as Comes a Horseman and Revelation 6-8, or not as historically profound as Samurai. But I think that in the grand scheme of things, this touches on every single aspect of what makes Highlander what Highlander is. Great flashbacks, great production, and most importantly, a great moral center to the story.
That's a good point, because you really have to give credit to David Abramowitz and the writers for writing. Now think about it. This is called Mortal Sins, not Immortal Sins.
Right.
Because we are subject to immortal sins almost every week.
Sure.
And to be able to kind of flip the coin and highlight a mortal sin and the struggle that an immortal will have and how it affects this person's life around other immortals is a really cool thing to do, to kind of flip it around. And, you know, so I got to give Abramowitz and the writing team full credit for doing that. Just fantastic idea. And as where it stands for me, I think I'm going to push it up there too. I had it kind of as a Connor
Kane.
Duncan Quickening with a half a cane. Well, I'm going to throw in the full cane and I'm going to throw in the Duncan, and, you know, me. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. That's not a deal.
We're looking at a 9.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you again, Vincent. Really, really appreciate you doing this. This was a lot of fun, too. You really made this a lot of fun when you challenged us to do that. So thank you. And for the other listeners out there, it's stuff like this that we love to see on Blooded Kings. So thank you guys so much. Norm, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, I can't wait until we actually dive into something as deep as this in the animated series.
The cartoon series that people want to hear more about, right?
You know, in all honesty, when you see episodes like this, and maybe it's the World War II aspect of it, but you know, we're looking at Mortal Sins, and this is very pointedly a World War II influenced episode story. But then you go all the way to the Valkyrie, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is probably the most historically accurately pointed story, because that had to deal with the assassination attempt on Hitler in the bunker. That is a well-known documented fact. I mean, the Tom Cruise movie, what was that movie called?
Oh, God. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Okay. The one that's based on that same story. Yeah.
Right. So
I think it was called Valkyrie, wasn't it?
I think it was called Valkyrie. Right. Because yeah, that was it was Operation Valkyrie. And that's historical, right? I mean, that's about as historical as it gets. But also, it has to deal with the fact that Duncan has to deal with the same immortal, and she had this whole, if they are guilty, they must be punished.
Yeah.
No matter what the cost is. And then there was a white supremacist speaker that she wanted to kill. And he was like, you don't have the right to do that. He has the right to say what he wants to say, you know, agree with him or disagree with him, but you don't have the right to kill him. And she was like, well, yes, I do. He's a Nazi. And he's like, well, no, he's not. He's a white supremacist, but he has that right. It's a different world. So it's really funny how Nazism and neo-Nazism still hold that same weight in terms of what is good and what is evil and what we perceive our heroes need to fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well said, Norm. Well said. Well, I want to remind everyone, first of all, please, please continue your awesome participation on the Blooded Kings fandom group there. We love it. And as you can tell, we will change our programming because of you.
True enough.
Yep. You can find Blooded Kings on Fandom Podcast Network, on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play for Android users, on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, and Blooded Kings Pod. Facebook, of course, Blooded Kings, a Highlander fandom group. But also, as we mention all the time, we have a Blooded Kings Highlander CCG collectible card game page as well. And we make lots of references to that all the time. If you would like to contact us, please, please email us at bloodedkingspodcast@gmail.com. If you have a show that you would like us to do a future audio commentary on and reasons why, please, that is a great way to do it as well. On Twitter, please follow us on Blood of Kings Pod. I'm Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at @Spartan_Phoenix. Norm, where can we find you?
You can always find me on Twitter and Instagram at Starfighter1701.
And Mike, I don't think has taken me up on my offer for a more Immortal Chimoli for that $20 on Twitter, but you can find him temporarily at @mcellcnl.
I think you need to buy him disco fries just to sweeten the pot.
and some Lipitor, right? Please leave us a review on iTunes. Please, I know we say this all the time, but please just take a time, if you have a few moments, go to iTunes, search for us, and please leave a review. We would very, very much appreciate it. And if you do, we will find a way to celebrate that and reward you, whether it's reading your review on a future episode and giving you high praises. And later down the line, I'm sure we will have some prizes to give away to some lucky winners. Norman, any last things you'd like to say?
Actually, I do. So I think everyone should sit back, because I'm going to expound a little bit here. Maybe it's because of the Lagavulin 10. I'm not sure. Maybe it's because that I love Highlander so much and so do you. But we are on the eve, Kevin, you and I, of hitting a personal goal. And,
yes.
And we have hit over 1,000 members on Facebook. It has been over a year since you made a phone call to me when I was at LAX dropping my mom off to go to the Philippines. And I think that my reaction was when you called me, it's like, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. Like, call me later. Right?
That's exactly what you sounded like.
Exactly.
I hung up going, I don't know if that went well.
If I may steal a moment, because Highlander means so much to me. I'm not exactly sure if the fans actually get it, but it is something that has profoundly shaped my life. I think that, Kevin, it has influenced a lot of your fandom, and I know that you came on a little bit later, but Highlander for me has profoundly shaped my fandom. It is by far one of my most important and influential fandoms that I think that has come or ever will come. Because of writing and drama like this, when you watch TV and when you feel that there is something in the content that has touched a very deep and moral center within you, it's the right TV to watch. And when you're watching something like Highlander and when you're listening to our commentary, think about this. Think about what you're watching and say to yourself, how has this influenced me? How has it continued to influence me? And is this something that someone today may actually benefit from? Because there are episodes like this. There are episodes for like For Tomorrow We Die. There are episodes where you're like, you know what? There are certain gray and moral areas that really challenge me and my beliefs as a person, not even necessarily as the character of Duncan MacLeod, who I am supporting. So that is what makes Highlander so great and has what compelled Kevin and myself to study and bring to you, because it is always evolving. Even though it was firmly entrenched from 1992 to 1998, it is still evolving as a series because great writing, great characters, great moral centers and dilemmas that challenge us as people. That's what makes Highlander so great, and I just needed to get that off my chest.
Oh, man, that's so cool. Man, I thought you were going to go in a completely different direction with that. I thought you were going to go, you know, Kevin, after that phone call at the airport, I was up all night wondering what you were going to say, and I couldn't sleep at all, and I had a horrible day the next day, and I was so happy to finally talk to you about it, and I can't believe we are where we are.
TLDR, because, you know, for the youngins out there, your phone call was impactful enough to make me shift gears away from Star Trek. And I think, and people who know me know that that's actually really profound.
I'm feeling a little verklempt there.
Yeah.
Dude, this ride has been so much fun and I appreciate it. And you know, everything you said, I'm feeling the same thing. And I just wanted to say, the best thing about this journey so far has been connecting with fellow fans.
Mm-hmm.
Because for a while it was just me, you, my buddy Kat, and our local player groups that played the CCG, you know? And being able to bring fellow fans together of Highlander onto a page like Bloody Kings makes me and Norm both very, very proud. And proud that also that you guys take pride in it like we do. And it's quite a milestone. I know it's a number. It's 1,000. You know, and I know there's many, many other fandom groups that have thousands more. But that's a milestone that we can be proud of. And it also gives us a chance to reflect because it falls on, you know, just about our 1-year anniversary of doing this show. And the anniversary of Highlander when we started last year, the 30th anniversary, which just seemed like kismet, you know, mm-hmm. Just everything fell into place and it just seemed to work. And and there's this continuous rise of fandom of Highlander, and I'm really excited about introducing Highlander to new fans with the new movies and the comic books, and hopefully our influence as well, Norm. So thank you for this journey, and looking forward to the future of this.
I can't wait to see the first scene, like the first preview or the first teaser of the Chad Stahelski Highlander. I mean, I think we will lose our minds.
Why do I have a feeling we're going to have a 2-hour podcast on like a 15-second teaser?
Oh, that's guaranteed. That is guaranteed.
Oh, well, thank you again so much, Norm. And again, thank you to Vince for letting us take the opportunity to do this, and encourage the rest of the fans to do so as well. On behalf of my awesome co-host and brother-in-arms, Norman, thank you everyone for listening, and join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Blood of Kings that could be inspired by you. Norm, the sensation you are feeling is the quickening. We are one. We are brothers. Goodbye, everyone.